This is the Disability Visibility Podcast with your host, Alice Wong.
Hey, this is a Disability Visibility Podcast. Conversations on disability politics, culture, and media. I'm your host, Alice Wong. Today's episode is about accessibility with my two guests, Leah Saint and Dara Baldwin. You'll first hear Leah's experiences navigating public spaces in the San Francisco Bay Area as a person with an invisible disability, and a specific instance with a business where accessibility and customer service went hand in hand. Next, Dara, a policy analyst, will tell us about the latest threats to accessibility and disability rights. A bill called the ADA Education and Reform Act of 2017. Dara shares what's at stake with this bill and what we should do to oppose it. Are you ready? Oh, here we go. So, Leah, thank you so much for joining with me on the podcast today. Why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself, if you don't mind?
Definitely. Thanks. And I'm really glad to be on the podcast. I'm excited that you asked me to be here. So, my name is Leah Saint. I work in human resources in the Bay Area. I have been disabled my whole life, but really only realized and adopted that identity when I was around 20 or 21. The symptoms and the pain started early in high school, but I didn't have a name for it, didn't know that anything was wrong until much later after college. I was really lucky to be introduced to the online disabled community through Tumblr and to find all these disabled and otherwise marginalized individuals like me in the last 5 or 6 years to relate to and learn from. And since meeting these people and being surrounded by them, my goal has always been education and awareness, especially for people like me with invisible disabilities.
That's awesome. So I guess since the topic today is about accessibility, do you mind kind of describing some of the what your experiences are like in terms of navigating spaces, whether it's physical or social, and just, you know, any kind of, you know, barriers you might have encountered as you just go about your daily life?
Sure. Well, I mean, as you said, there's physical barriers and there's social barriers. You know, as someone who is generally invisibly disabled, but I do have a wheelchair and a cane that I use on occasion on high pain days, it can change from depending on what state I'm in and what mobility device I may be using or not using. I've had people stare at me in parking lots when I put up my tag and then walk out of my car. I've had people judge me for laughing too much when I'm in my wheelchair, as though disabled people can only ever be sad and angry, or they can only be, you know, hopeful and inspiring. They seem to forget that there's in-betweens, that we're people with every range of emotions. Mm-hmm. I've had people spit on me on public transportation for taking one of the blue seats.
Oh my goodness, really?
Yes, that was one of the worst experiences. It was incredibly embarrassing. No one else on the bus said anything. No one talked to me. No one came to my defense. I think that day I ended up getting off the bus early and just waiting for a different bus just because I was so mortified. Mm-hmm. And a couple of years after that, once I was taking the bus to work every week, I bought a cane, not because I needed the cane. In fact, it tends to get in the way when I'm walking. It's really difficult to walk with a cane when I don't need it. Mm-hmm. It's useful when I'm standing. It kind of gives me more stability. It gives me kind of a tripod stance, but it gets in the way otherwise. But I bought that cane really to make the invisible disability visible when I'm in public. So when I'm on public transit, if I get on a bus with a cane, people are more likely to give me their seat than if I just get on looking perfectly healthy, because this is apparently not what disability looks like to most people.
That's really messed up, don't you think? It's like, there isn't enough understanding, or at least, you know, flexibility in people's understanding of, you know, disability is not static. It's not always apparent. And the fact that people, you know, harass and humiliate you is it making you kind of have this outward signifier. It's pretty horrible.
Definitely.
And do you mind sharing some experiences you've had, like, you know, let's say in public, or let's say at a restaurant or at some sort of place where you had a request or advocate for disability, and, you know, some examples of things that worked out fantastically or other things that were not so positive?
Sure. I mean, I've had good and bad experiences. When I first got my wheelchair in 2013, I got it anticipating that I would be able to use it on my high pain days. I wasn't planning on using it every day. I didn't think I would be a full-time wheelchair user. There was one time I was going out to see a comedy show, and I didn't want to drive because I knew parking was going to be hard in that neighborhood. So I tried to request a lift, but I wanted to take my wheelchair to the comedy club. And at the time, there was no way to request a car that I could guarantee would have room for my chair in the trunk or anything. So I tried to call for a standard taxi cab, but I found out that there were only 3 accessible taxi cabs across all of San Francisco on a Saturday night. So I had to just test my luck, get a regular taxi cab, and hope that, you know, if they have space for a suitcase, they would have space for a wheelchair. And I did get lucky, but that was kind of frustrating. But on the other hand, that same night, I had called the comedy club ahead of time, and they were great. They had put a reserved sign on 2 folding chairs, moved one out of the way when I arrived. They shook my hand when I arrived, treated me like a person. They were really communicative. They were just really thoughtful about the way they treated me. So, I mean, you can have a good and bad experience back to back like that.
In all of this, I think what is, you know, not just as a person with an invisible disability, but there's so much invisible labor that people with disabilities have to do just to do the same things that our non-disabled counterparts do. Could you talk a little bit about the toll of, like, all this kind of labor that you do every day that mostly, that most people either take for granted or just have absolutely no clue that all the effort took just for you to get to that venue?
Yeah, I mean, I have to plan ahead. And luckily, planning does come pretty easily to me, but I really have to plan ahead. If I'm going to be going out, I need to say, okay, what is this venue? Let me look up reviews and see what people have said about the venue. Let me look up pictures. Is the bathroom down a narrow hallway? I'm going to have to call and hope that I get someone who's understanding, or hope that I get someone on the phone at all who can tell me about their accessibility options and what I can expect. I have to then think about things like, okay, what am I going to wear that's going to be the most comfortable? What's the weather that day? If I'm going to a concert or a show or something that's really high energy, what am I doing in the days leading up to that to make sure that I'm preserving energy but also not using no energy? Because with my condition, my muscles can atrophy really fast. So staying too stationary is also not great for me. So there's a ton of planning that goes into it. And it's really hard for anyone who doesn't have a condition like this to even fathom the level of planning that goes into doing anything.
And I don't know about you, but sometimes, you know, I mentally have to prepare for, you know, expecting a subpar experience so that when people do treat me with respect and like a person, it's like such a refreshing thing, even though that should be the norm. Do you find that most of the times you've had pretty, you know, decent, you know, experiences accessing with accessibility, or do you feel like it's, you know, it's very random?
Frankly, I think I tend to go in with a negative view a lot of the times. I tend to assume I'm not going to get help. I tend to assume that people are going to be judgmental, or they'll tell me that everything will be fine and I'll show up and no one will know what I'm talking about. So I tend to be kind of negative, but I've been really lucky with the last couple of times that I've called venues to ask about their accessibility. I've had some really great accessibility experiences just in the last year. In the last 2 or 3 months, I've gone to 2 concerts where the venue had pre-thought about accessibility. They were willing to work with me to make sure that I had a good time at a show instead of just telling me how I was allowed to act or where I was allowed to be. One of those was at a small venue in Berkeley where just at this venue, by asking questions, every single person we talked to was helpful. The person working at the ticket desk gave us the names of everyone who would be on staff that night and then alerted those people that I would be there and would need some accessibility help. There were chairs just at the side of the venue. And I asked, because again, it doesn't hurt to ask, hey, can I just take this chair and drag it right to the floor of the stage? So I basically kind of create my own front row where I'm sitting and then everyone's just standing behind me. And the bartender and the bouncers were not only on board with that, but they said, hey, if you have a problem, if someone's giving you a problem about this, if someone's getting in your way, come find us or send someone to come find us and we will personally talk to them and tell them they can't get in your way. And that was outstanding to me that I was treated in such a way that was just respectful and I was able to have such a great time. And yeah, on one hand, that's something really amazing and I wanted to celebrate that. But on the other hand, it's a little frustrating that that's not the norm.
And if it's okay, I mean, maybe we should just give them a shout out because the venue that you went to is called Cornerstone Berkeley.
Yes, so it was the Cornerstone Music Venue in Berkeley. I went to a show there in September. The entire staff was amazing, and I would love to give a shout out. So it was Jenny, who was at the box office. She asked what I needed. She didn't ask any insulting questions. She just asked, what do you need? What can we do for you? Corey was also at the box office. He promised that the staff would take care of us. He promised that I'd have seating with a clear view of the stage. And I know that there's some venues where clear view of the stage can mean, well, it's clear if no one's standing in front of you, but otherwise tough luck. And the last person was TJ, who was the bouncer at Cornerstone, who was the one who was saying, anyone gives you problems, you come straight to me. And at the end of the night, TJ came and found me and he said, did you have fun? High-fived me. He was super on my side. And that felt amazing. And that really should be the norm for anyone working with any customers, because you don't always know who's disabled. You don't always know who needs help. So it doesn't hurt to treat people as humans.
And you wrote about this experience with this venue in October of 2017 in a piece you wrote called Accessibility and the Kids Who Go to Shows. And when I read that piece, I immediately wanted to interview you about this subject, and I think if you don't mind, I'm going to read one of your pieces, quote from you. You wrote something that I just loved. It's,
sure.
So you said, accessibility is more than ramps and parking spots. Accessibility is also about basic human decency that goes beyond the law. The kind that the staff at Cornerstone showed to me, and they tried to allow me to have one of the greatest concert growth experiences of my life. Accessibility is about people. So, you know, I think most people often have a very narrow idea of what accessibility is. What are your thoughts about, you know, what is accessibility? What do you want it to be for people who don't, who maybe kind of completely listening to this podcast and not really knowing much about accessibility, what do you want to share to folks?
Sure. I mean, again, it's beyond compliance. It's beyond enforcement of, you know, ramps, parking spaces, elevators, image descriptions, audio captions. That should all be standard by now. And it's still not, which is a problem. But accessibility is also about human connections. It's about not othering disabled people. It's about not making us jump through hoops to get what we need out of the world. It's, you know, again, asking those questions without being insulting, finding out what we actually need rather than trying to make those decisions for us. And it's, you know, we spend a lot of time and energy, like I said, thinking ahead and pre-planning. So a great thing a venue can do is to do some of that pre-planning for us. You know, have accessibility information up on your website. Have an accessibility specialist if you're able to. I went to a concert just a couple of weeks ago where, again, I called the venue and said, I want to ask about accessible seating. And they said, we're going to transfer you to our accessibility person. And they had someone on staff who it was their job to make sure that people with disabilities and people with, you know, certain needs for being in a public space like that were able to still have a great time. And I think that's something that any venue could work towards, if not do right away.
Is there anything else you'd like to share in terms of things like the ADA? Is there anything else you want to share with us?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't realize that the ADA is kind of an imperfect law. I think it's a really great starting point, but compliance is just not strictly enforced. It's not uniformly enforced. Businesses can use this legal loophole of finding accessibility incorporation, quote, an undue hardship to avoid making any changes. So you end up with historic buildings refusing to add elevators or widen doorways. You have small shops saying they can't shoulder the costs of removing entrance stairs or adding a ramp. There are times that I've been treated worse than one of those rolling garbage bins when I'm in my wheelchair, and that's totally legal according to the ADA. So there's a lot to do there that's far from perfect. Any disabled person can tell you that, but it is a starting point. And, you know, recently Congress has been trying to create a new bill that would change the way that businesses are required to comply with the ADA, but HR 620 is really not the answer either. Instead of putting the burden on the businesses and requiring them to comply and making the ADA stronger or more structured, it's putting that burden on the community of people with disabilities. It's putting that burden squarely on the shoulders of those who frankly don't have the time or energy to handle that.
Well, Via, I am so thankful for your story and your voice and your presence, and thank you for all that you do.
Thank you. You're an amazing part of this community, and I'm so honored that I got to talk to you today.
Dara, welcome to the podcast. I am so excited to talk to you today. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Alice, for having me. It is an honor to finally talk to you and to do this special podcast on a very important issue.
Absolutely. And why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? You are the Senior Public Policy Analyst at the National Disability Rights Network. Tell me a little bit about NDRN and what you do there and anything you want to share about yourself.
Sure, Alice. Thank you. I live and work in Washington, D.C. I'm honored and blessed to do the work that I do. I am a disability rights advocate, as well as you said, a senior public policy analyst at the National Disability Rights Network. I'll talk about the network first and then myself. So NDRN is the National Office for the Protection and Advocacy Programs around the country. They are the civil rights lawyers for people with disabilities. They were founded in the late 70s after the Geraldo Rivera, for his first investigative report around the horrific situation and way in which they treated people with disabilities at Willowbrook in New York. And then Senator Jacob Javits, anyone who's been to New York, Javits Center, it was named after him. He created the PNA system in 1976. When I say we, the PNA systems, they are under DHHS, Department of Health and Human Services. They are non-competitive, annually granted through federal funds. The only criteria for a person to use a protection and advocacy program is that they must be a person with a disability and they must admit to that disability. You know, we can't help people who won't. We have some people who, you know, you don't have to disclose or anything, but you have to disclose to the PNA in order to get some help. And so that's the network, and that's what they do there. NDRN is the national office, and we do training and technical assistance for the network. And I've been there since 2014. Prior to that, I worked for TASH. Then I worked for NICL, the National Council for Independent Living. And I was also the ADA compliance specialist for the Mayor Gray, Mayor of the District of Columbia. I've been doing disability policy since 2009. I came right before the passage of the Hate Crimes Act, in which we helped to make sure that disabilities was included in that. And then I've been doing social justice and equity work probably all of my life. I grew up with it. My family is very involved in voting rights and school education rights. So I grew up around that with both my parents being very active in their community and my grandparents. So that's where it comes from for me. It's a passion and a love to do this work.
Mm-hmm. Kate, I really do appreciate all the, you know, your email alerts, the information that you share about the latest going on the Hill. Yeah, today's episode is about, you know, the ADA and accessibility. And essentially, I want to talk to you about HR 620, which is also known as the ADA Education and Reform Act of 2017. So for people who have never heard of this bill, why don't you tell our listeners what the bill is and what it will mean for people with disabilities?
The bill, as you said, is H.R. 620, the ADA Education and Reform Act. And H.R., if you're ever doing federal policy, H.R. is a House of Representatives. So it is in the House where this bill stands. And every Congress is numbered since 1776. So we are in the 115th Congress. And for the 115th Congress, every time a representative puts in a bill to be looked at and made into a law, it gets a number. And so this was the 620th bill. So a lot of people don't understand that. So I just want to make sure they know that. It's kind of the same as if you do state work, it's the same thing, H in your state. You just don't have the R probably next to it. So anyway, it was introduced by Representative Ted Poe of Texas. He's a Republican from Texas, along with Representative Scott Peters, Democrat from California. And so it is considered an ADA notification bill. They've been around, unfortunately, since the early 2000s, I would have to say. In 1990, when they did the ADA, almost 28 years ago now, the disability community, the business community, and the Hill, meaning all of Congress, both the Senate and the House, came together and made a deal. One of the part was, right, any building built before 1990, right, is not in, you don't have to be accessible unless you touch the building. And then after 1990, you have to be accessible. You have to make the ramps and the doors wide enough and anything after that. And any building built after 1990 had to be accessible, right? Because you weren't going to go back and do all of those things. Another agreement was that also they knew the buildings that weren't built before 1990 weren't accessible, or that people wouldn't follow, right? It's very hard to enforce laws. So this is where we come in. People are building buildings still that are not accessible. And so you have this thing. You have a process where you can file a complaint. If you won the case, which you probably would, you would get what's called injunctive relief, which is fix the door, right? Make the ramp. You have to do that. And attorney's fees, which this really, I mean, we've seen around the country, maybe $500, because attorney just really has to fill out a form. And that was fine. What they did not put in was damages. You could not get personal damages for that, which is fine. And there are certain states who pass the ADA law. You can pass your own state laws, right? You can't weaken a federal law. You can strengthen it. And some states have put in damages. So you could get damages as well. And so those states have done that. And it is in those states where you find this run amok is what I call it, attorneys who go around and say to the 7-Elevens, you're not accessible, we're going to sue you. But it seems like when it comes to this, they just cut a check to these attorneys because it's more damages. Like we just see the complaint. You don't see a whole lot of lawsuits being filed. It's just the threat of being sued. And then what also these attorneys do is come back over and over and over and over again and do this. From that, many businesses have been complaining about it and saying it's bankrupting them when it can't possibly. Like, the highest we've seen is about an $8,000 payout. And let me tell you, if you're a small business and you're going to go out of business because of $8,000, you weren't doing too well from the beginning. So let's be real here, right? It's really a pushback of them just not wanting to be accessible. And it's been 28 years. And when are you going to do this? They also, when you look at the title of the bill, it says ADA Education and Reform Act. So it's real interesting. There's no need for all of that. And so Ted Poe in Texas decided to introduce this bill. So here we are in 115th. The new bill has been introduced. And unfortunately, not only did we have a Democrat who introduced this bill, but we now have Democrats who are on the bill as co-sponsors.
And what are the main elements of the bill?
So the other issues about the bill, one is that the shopping centers basically don't want to have to address your complaint if you come to their place of business with a complaint or filing a complaint or damages against the damages of them not being accessible. And I'm using shopping centers because it is the shopping centers lobbyists who are pushing this. But if you go and read their letter, you'll see it's many people, realtors. Unfortunately, now grocery stores have joined in, and so they don't want to do this. And so what notification is that you may come up to the 7-Eleven, you can't get in, there's stairs, that's a barrier, architectural barrier. So you would have to find out who owns that 7-Eleven, which usually may not be the gentleman or woman or person inside running it. So you have to find out who they are, file a complaint, and it gets sent to them. They get 60 to 90 days, actually it's 90 days, to get back to you about it and let you know what's going on. And in fact, in the bill, it says to present substantial progress. There's no definition of what substantial progress is, but that surely doesn't mean fix the barrier, like get rid of the stairs. And then if they don't do it and, you know, they may not have enough time, they may not be a contractor who can come and do it. So they get another 60 days. And so it goes to 180 days, which is almost 6 months before you as a person with a disability can get into that 7-Eleven, which is not what the ADA does right now. The ADA right now, as I told you, you file your complaint, they're supposed to take care of it. And you know, things happen to them. DOJ, you can file your complaint with DOJ, you can file your complaint with a lawyer, and they have to address this immediately. Most people with disabilities and their family members don't want to file a complaint, right? They want to get into the store. They want their, right? And so they also want to not only be a customer, but they also want to work in those stores. And it's not just the entrances into the stores. Many stores, if you can get in, their bathrooms aren't accessible, right? Or their fitting rooms aren't accessible. So they need to be fully accessible. And so that's a problem. So the bill will push that off, which also does not give an incentive to businesses to be accessible, right? Why do it when, oh, I could just wait, you know, I could just keep doing it 60, 90, 180. I just keep doing it over and over again because all I need is substantial progress, which is not defined. And so this is wrong. In any other civil rights case or any other thing else, so me, I am an African-American woman, and I don't have a disability, but say I went to that 7-Eleven and they said, you can't come in or you can't shop here. I have immediate relief. If this law passes, this will create a separate class of people who can't do it, right? So people with disabilities don't have that anymore when they have a civil right, which is called the ADA. That is what the ADA is about, community integration and civil and human rights. Communities of color will tell you, no, right? You can't do this to Muslims. You can't do this, right? You can't do this to religious groups. So why is it okay to do it to people with disabilities? So that's the basis of that part of the bill. And then the education side, they're saying these business owners are saying, oh, we need more education. We need to be educated more, when that's not true either, because 2 years after the ADA was passed, in the implementation of the ADA, they created what is called ADA resource centers. So they're trying to say they don't get the education, which is not true. What we have seen is they don't use the ADA resource centers.
Yeah, and I just want to segue to action. And what can people do who want to, you know, stop HR 620?
But what you can do is look at the House Judiciary Committee. You can go to the website, just Google House Judiciary Committee. The members' names will come up. If you have a member in your state, you make sure you make a phone call to them and say, I oppose this bill, as well as your own member. Even if that member is not on the Judiciary Committee, please call all of your representatives in your state, so you have multiple representatives in your state, and tell them, I oppose this bill, and tell them why. And you can go to CCD Consortiums for Citizens with Disabilities website. Just Google CCD Disability and click on, it'll come up. Right on the front page, it says Save the ADA. And you can find all kinds of information there. Look at the myths and facts sheet. That will help you out a lot. So call your representatives. And don't call them once. Please. Call them once a week. Every week, you know, like every Wednesday. Or get a little round going on in your neighborhood and in your community where you go, you know, wherever you go and have fun and mix and mingle with people. You know, have your neighbors call, your coworkers call on Monday, on Tuesday, on Wednesday, and call them and say, we oppose this bill. So right now, the bill is not moving, thank goodness. We're almost at the end of this first session, and we don't see it going anywhere, which is great. We also have not seen a Senate bill being introduced, so that's great as well. There's also a change.org petition, as you were saying, for every day. And what I do is every Monday morning, I send that change.org petition to the Hill with the new numbers. We're up to about 1,680 something. It'd be great to have some more on there. So if you go on there and you go to change.org, it says, don't tread on my ADA. You know, make sure you call your representative. If they're a Democrat, our ask is get off of the bill, because you're on record saying you support weakening the ADA.
So, Dara, I really appreciate you giving me this update and overview of this bill and what it means in terms of, you know, accessibility and basic human rights for 57 million plus Americans with disabilities. And do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share?
That we can stop this bill. And then the last thing I say, when we do stop this bill, like we're planning, it will not pass on 115th. As long as you guys do what we ask you guys to do, advocates, we need you to call in and keep on them. And then we need to go to the next step and have those conversations with the small businesses. That's the other side. You know, if you encounter a business that's not accessible, then do that and say, we want to work with you. We want to talk with you. And contact ICSC, which is the International Council on Shopping Centers. Google them and call their office and say, hey, we want to help. So we need to let legislators and people know we want to resolve this problem, because we don't want you to weaken the ADA. We don't want that to happen. So, and the last thing I want to say is, again, thank you everyone out there who has helped out and continue to help out. I know you have been stressed and pulled in all different ways this year with all the different things, but get some rest and get yourselves together and then get back out there, because the fight's not over.
It sure is. Well, thank you again, Dara. I really appreciate you very much, your expertise.
Thank you.
Thank you. This podcast is a production of the Disability Visibility Project, an online community dedicated to creating, sharing, and amplifying disability media and culture. All episodes, including text transcripts, are available at disabilityvisibilityproject.com/podcast. You can also find links to Leah's story and more about HR620 on our website. The audio producer for this episode is Rita D. Beta. Introduction by Latif McLeod. New music by Wilshire Sports Jam. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Want to support this podcast? If you have the means, you can donate as little as $1 a month at our Patreon page at patreon.com/DVP. That's patreon.com/DVP. Thanks for listening. See you on the internet. Bye.